The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy,
it's time to get this party started. It's a footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and the Dripping JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. And man, we're in a certain mood today, it seems like. Amy Walsh, she's here. There's Craig Forrest. There's Danielle Wongerson. There's Jimmy Brennan. There's Jeffrey Cole. I'm James Sharman. It seems like the calm before the storm almost, actually. We're kind of getting set up for the big weekend. We're kind of coming down still from what happened a couple of days ago now. We're still making sense of the madness of yesterday at the World Cup. But just to get you set up for today, will there be more shockers today? One does wonder. Today we have Ivory Coast, Norway. That's the early one. France, Sweden. Got a feeling that could be a smashing, like a smashing. We saw Sweden try and play in the last match against the Dutch and get smashed. And Mexico, Ecuador. Could a host be crashing out today? I think there's a very good chance a host could be crashing out today, but we'll find out. Yesterday's results, of course, were kind of crazy. Japan almost did it against Brazil, losing 2-1 at the death. Germany didn't do it, losing to Paraguay 1-1. And then losing to Paraguay 1-1 on penalties. Sorry, just to put that in there. And the Dutch crashed out to Morocco. So we now know who Canada's playing. They're playing Morocco. So every game so far has been settled beyond 90 minutes.
Yeah, I saw that.
Come alive, hasn't it, Dubs? It's been brilliant World Cup so far. But group phase is always, okay, it's nice. It's nice. Now what's in real legitimate drama? And when you get your first shootouts, and teams being kicked out, now it feels like the World Cup's definitely here.
And a little bit of chaos, right? Like it's been the jeopardy that was maybe lacking in the group stages, but those spot kicks, those pens, Morocco and the Netherlands, they were insane. Like I was chatting to Forrest a little bit, and we'll dive into the match and how Canada lines up against them, but they're going to be in tough because Morocco are a hell of a good side. But the spot kicks, I'm just like, what are we doing here? And I saw somebody say, somebody that I respect on Twitter was like, what is Virgil van Dijk doing letting young kids step up and take penalties? I'm like, what an odd take. He is a defender. We've seen the Dutch.
Who was it? Who said that?
I'm not going to say.
Come on.
No,
I know you don't respect very many people. So,
Forrest, that's
Forrest,
not true.
There's Dubs and you're no longer friends.
Yeah, it was Craigor. And I just like, no, like the captain doesn't dictate. Like, yes, sometimes there's the voice that's, valiantly steps forward and says, I'm going to shoulder the pressure and I'm going to step up. I'm going to do this for the team, for the country, for the badge and all that stuff. But it's not that. He's a defender. We've seen Koeman go with defenders before and it fall flat, right? But I was talking to Forrest about this, and Forrest, I really want to hear you about some of the goalkeeping, because there was like just almost a tragic own goal with the save by the Dutch goalkeeper where he comes up big and then he kicks it into his goal after he smothers the ball. It sneaks underneath him and he almost backheels it into his own net. And I was watching it with JP and he was looking at me and he's like, this is eerie now because you've predicted almost all of these errant penalties. Because with the stutter steps and how intricate they are, but overly so, it's overly complicated. Just smash it. Just hit it into the back of the net, right? Like stop doing too much. But I said, this could go one way or another for the Dutch keeper. It's either he's going to be the hero or he's going to be in his head. And it didn't seem to matter because there were still some miscues from other players. But like this is exactly what the World Cup needed. It's like the on the edge of your seat. You have no idea what's going to happen. Both teams showing up. It was a really physical, kind of tightly contested match as well, where you saw the Dutch try to hit them on the counter, but Morocco had like the bulk of the play. And you just knew it was going to go into extra time. But yeah, the match had absolutely everything. And we talked about, much to Wonger's chagrin, after he pissed all over Japan, Netherlands early in the group stages. And Jimmy and I were like, that was a fabulous game. What are you talking about? Like, this game, if you hadn't been tuning into the World Cup up until this point, one, what are you doing? Because we're like, wait, other sporting events are happening? Wimbledon just started? Like, what do you mean? You're like, because we've firmly got our World Cup blinders on. Like, this was the matchup that you should be tuning in to see. And if you hadn't watched anything else, this match had everything. But Forrest, I want to ask you particularly, the goalkeeper, Bono, who's actually born in Montreal, plays for Morocco. And this has come up before because Morocco was in Canada's group in Qatar, right? We've heard the storyline before. He makes a save where he just shuffles over, doesn't dive, stays on his feet, big body, big paw, just blocks it because it's coming in with some venom. But why do we not see that more?
Yeah, I wonder why we don't, because it makes a lot of sense. First of all, moving along on the line, you're allowed to do. I think you don't see as much as that maybe because they're trying to think of their technique to make sure that their starting point, they're not going to jump off the line and get called back on it. So I think there's some of that in play. But when you think about it, and I started to do it in my end of my career, where you can't go too early because obviously they're going to shooter might see that, especially with what we saw from the penalties over the last day. But if you move to one side and you just say, okay, I'm going to give up the other side, we're going to give them that, but I'm going to take a 50-50 chance that I'm going to protect 4-yard goal, basically. So I'm going to halfway to this post, I'm going to protect that. And if you think about it, if somebody's hitting the ball, even from 12 yards, and the goal is only that big, and you stay on your feet, you're pretty hard to beat.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why we don't see that actually more, because it does actually make sense.
Craiger, it's like a dare almost, right? You're daring that penalty kicker who is literally on the spot already. Like, he's already being focused in on the pressure. You're ramping up the pressure.
Yeah. And as well as if you're going to stutter step, or you're going to do a little delay before you do it, and you know that the power isn't going to be there to blow it past you, you got a fair chance of saving it.
Mm-hmm.
And he just made it look so easy. He just stayed on his feet. He just went, bonk,
yep.
Put his left
hand. Judo chop.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then the one that went under the Dutch keeper is funny, because we were at a fan zone and most of our crew are Dutch. So we're in this fan zone with all our crew, and this happens. And there's only two of us actually out of all of them that saw it squeak underneath him in the back of the net. So,
uh-oh. Wait a minute, Craig Forrest. What are on your cheeks there?
Hey, I would rather have the Dutch than the Moroccans.
Hey, just for the listeners out there, when Dubs referring to Craig's cheeks, she's referring to his face. I've got a picture of Craig.
Why are you bent over like that?
Oh, my mate Steph's in Seattle as well with Craig, and he's ratted Craig out. Just so you know, when you see Steph, he sent me a picture of Craig with a Netherlands is it a sticker on your cheek there?
Yeah, you know what, of them they were repping Canada hats while they're watching the Dutch game. I'm like, okay, yeah, paint me up. So anyway, that slips underneath them and they're going berserk, and I'm literally looking around it. It's in the net. And they're going crazy. They're throwing beer around. Ah! No, it's in the net.
Oh, it's so like, tragic.
Oh, man. What a moment for sure. But a lot of Moroccan fans at the fan zone. Probably 80%.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
I tell you what, Jimmy, if I'm, you know, Dubs is saying, if you weren't watching this game, what were you doing? Let's hope Canada wasn't watching this game. If I'm Jesse, I'm saying, no need to watch that one, guys. Just ignore it. It didn't happen. You know, we'll find out our opponents on Friday. Morocco, they're so good.
They are the real deal. And I think we saw that in the first match when they played Brazil, where we all went, wow, this Moroccan side is ridiculous. Just their tempo, the energy that they play at is phenomenal. The pace all over the park, their ball control, their technique, they're so good. You know, we witnessed them in the last World Cup and we said how good they were. And then coming into this one, it was kind of, well, was that a one-off or are these guys actually legit? These guys are legit. Mm-hmm. And when you watch that Dutch and Morocco game, for me, that's a semifinal of a World Cup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The standard of play was ridiculous. And for a 32 knockout stage, like, that's incredible. Incredible. And you feel for the Dutch because you're going, you guys are a legit side. You're a very, very good team. And you're getting knocked out now. And, you know, if they was in a different bracket or a different team, they probably would have went an awful lot further than what they did. So... But it's Morocco. Oh, this is going to be a tough one for Canada. Honestly, it's going to be a tough one. And I don't care what team it is in the world. When if you get matched up against Morocco, you're shaking your head, going, "How are we winning this one?" This is a game that there's no room for errors against this Moroccan side because they will punish you.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I think for an armchair fan, they're probably thinking, "Oh, this is a better draw, better matchup for Canada than Holland." Not so much.
Nope.
So much. Just from history standpoint, yes, of course, right? But for quality, and remember, I don't know about the starting lineup, but none of them were born in Morocco. Like, you're playing like really good European players, basically.
One of these teams very different to the one that Canada met 4 years ago as well. If you look at the squad and the starting 11, it's very different. And they were good back then. It's been this evolution. And they've been a powerhouse in Africa for a while. They're AFCON champions, kind of.
Yeah.
Until
depending who you talk to.
Right. What ball boy is playing on the sideline.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. But you see the Dutch, I mean, when the Dutch sit back, Dubs, and they put five, sometimes six men in that back line, mm-hmm. That's a respect level from a Dutch team that I know is very unpalatable for a lot of Dutch fans, but it does show the respect they have for Morocco.
Yeah, because when they were pushing and it was really more open, I mean, they're playing clearly with a three and they're flying Van de Ven and Dumfries really high, right? And the battles and the channels, and this is what Canada have to be really wary of, where you've got Mesraoui and you've got Hakimi running at you. Like, I talked about Alphonso Davies and almost like the jig is up, like he was used effectively as that decoy and you got players to stand off him. You got players to kind of come over to double team him, and it created space for Canada in the last 15 minutes of that matchup in the round of 32 versus South Africa. But if you're Morocco, you've seen that now. You're not striking fear in the opponent at this point because you're subbing in Alphonso Davies as a finisher because he's 70%? Like, I feel like that's generous, right? Like, hopefully he was maybe holding back a little bit and he's got a little bit of extra rest time. But back to your point, Sharms, I think the game state there where you see the emotion of a Cody Gakpo scoring that goal, and what a brilliant goal it was, because, like, again, I mentioned them on the break and how lethal they'd been, but Somerville, who goes to ground, like, he was really lively and he was causing problems, you know, for Diop and Riyad and that back line for Morocco. But he goes to ground and he sweeps his leg over, and that's what gets the ball over to his left to an on-rushing Gakpo, and he's able to bury it. And I thought at first, oh God, like, me as a Liverpool fan, And just a fan of the game, I'm like, please don't be injured. But it's obviously just everything that's happening with him kind of off the pitch. And you saw people in tears and anyway, so like the game really did have everything. It had, is it Van, how do you say his name? I always say it wrong. Van Hecke? Van Hecke?
Yeah, I think it's Van Hecke.
The defender? Yeah, Van Hecke where he's so, I love him as a player. Like he evokes like kind of what I was like, less technically adept, but like just going in hard and committing and causing issues for the other team. And he gets his head smashed open from an errant cleat on a set piece. And it just had everything, right? But yeah, I think once they got that goal, they sat back. And then, and Morocco sensed that and they kind of smelled the blood, you know, that like this team was ripe for the taking. And then something else Canada's going to have to contend with is the big man at the back on set pieces, like Diop, whether it's a, you know, dead ball or a corner kick, like that's going to be very, very difficult for Canada to handle.
So how do they handle it? What do they do? I mean, this, we've got a few days to delve deeper into this. I don't want to get too deep into the tactical breakdown of what to expect. But Craig, what's Jesse Marsh thinking? I mean, what they're best at, Canada, is being on the front foot, but it is being on the front foot. What are you doing, Dwonga?
It's a good time to bring in our sponsor.
Oh, right.
World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's game on with Tim.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Game on.
It's game on.
That's brilliant.
It really was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm terrified about this one. Craig, I mean, very briefly, like, what does Jesse Marsh do? Like I said, they're better on the front foot as far as, you know, attacking and trying to win the ball up the pitch. Is that the best way to deal with Morocco?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I doubt that we're going to see Canada put numbers, massive numbers behind and try to do something they've never done before. But you certainly have to worry about that defensively. And yeah, Hakimi, the right back, is basically a forward. Gets down the line really well. They're going to get at you. But then when you listen to the Dutch fans and they're like, you know what, I'd rather have had a go as opposed to doing something like that and sitting back and just waiting for trouble to happen. I think there's a bit of a happy medium. I think they're going to have to probably slow it down, have certain triggers, you know, that will set them off to press at the right times. But I don't think we'll see that endlessly because I don't think they can do that for 90 minutes against this side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think, Jimmy, yeah. I mean,
I agree. It's a tough one. It really is a tough match trying to figure out how you're going to play against this Moroccan side. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to winning your individual battles all over the park. And if you can compete and match the work rate and then some, you'll get something out of the match. But this is definitely a match where we cannot have any passengers. Everybody has to be focused, dialed in for 90 plus minutes in this match, because this is going to be a test, a true test.
Yeah, if we got through this, this would be a level of play that we're gonna see from the Canadian team that we've probably never seen before. It would be a scalp that would be beyond. It would get worldwide attention. This is what we're talking about this stage. And hey, the pressure is off. And Jimmy, when you think about the Gold Cup back in 2000, the pressure that we were under playing against Mexico, the pressure under. We were underplaying Trinidad and Tobago, especially with the president being from Trinidad, Jack Warner. Yeah. And we got through that. We didn't play particularly well, but we got through it. And then Colombia, the pressure was really off because, well, when one, we had already won the confederation because they were from another confederation. But having that, the pressure just released that it can bring out the absolute best because nobody's expecting Canada to win this. And we've competed. We go back 2 years, Copa America. We competed against the best teams. And I think we can compete. But you're right. The individual battles have to be there, and they're going to have to play at a level that we haven't seen before because these guys are top drawer.
Yeah. July 9th was that Copa America semifinal against Argentina, the world champions. 2 years younger than this dominant Argentina is now. Martinez in goal. Montiel, Romero, Martinez, Tagliafico, Di Maria, DePaul, Enzo, McAllister, Alvarez and Leo Messi. Lost 2-0.
Yeah.
Very respectable.
Yeah.
They can play. They can rise. They can rise to the challenge. And what the danger is here, Morocco's great. Okay, we acknowledge that. We got 4 days to boost this Moroccan team to be the 1970 Brazil. Which is going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Also, they're really good, but let's just take a bit of a breath. And I know I've been the one kind of driving this train since this podcast started about how great this Moroccan team is, and they are. But okay, they're not the best team ever in the history of the world, but by Friday, they're going to be that. I can guarantee it.
Yeah, and you're going to have to mark this, but fuck respectable, right? Mm. You're going into this, like there's all kinds of that Jesse Marsh throwing around a free hit and all that stuff. It's just about taking the pressure off for these guys, right? It's not about saying, oh, we're just lucky to be here. No, like it's knockout football. Go out there. We haven't seen this team at their best. We haven't seen them play a comprehensive 90-minute match yet. So there's no better time than Saturday, right? And this is also Moroccan side that only beat Scotland 1-0. You remember that, speaking of chaos and the penalties with the Dutch and Morocco, remember that match versus Haiti? Remember that first half where they were down, right? And ultimately the quality reigned supreme and they were able to see it out 4-2. But this team is not perfect, you know? So don't overestimate what they can bring. See them for who they are, where they've got tons of quality, tons of class, individuals who can change a game. But I wanted to ask Jimmy this. Forrest, I want to hear you on it too. And I know we don't want to delve too deep on the tactics, but Canada's wingers have underperformed. And looking at the strength that Morocco has in the flanks, who do you go with to contend with Mesraoui and Hakimi?
Well, I think with Hakimi, the way that he plays, that's going to be Richie Lherea that's going to be dealing with him because he bombs on so much, which won't be a problem because I think Richie with his pace and how he defends 1v1, but he's going to have to keep his eye on him because Hakimi's movement's brilliant. And then on the right side as well, once the left-sided player pushes high, Alistair Johnson, exact same thing. So there's going to be a lot of work. Our wide players are going to have to track. They're going to do a lot of tracking as well because Morocco's wide players, once they come inside, then someone's got to pick them up and then you got to pick up the wide players. But it's our wide players are going to have to do the dirty side of the game in this match, meaning they've got to track back and they have to defend. They have to. They cannot cheat. If they cheat, we'll get exposed. So when you're thinking about, okay, Buchanan out wide, but he'll end up a little bit deeper. And the reason being is because if Morocco are on the front foot and they're in control, and once they get set, they fan out, that means our wide players are going to be pushed back. So we have to take control of this game at certain points and allow our wide players to get up higher, because if we don't, we're just going to be defending for a long periods of the game. So it's important our midfielders get on the ball, and when the time is right, keep possession, keep the ball, especially in that middle third. Because you think when our wide guys track back and then to go forward, you're looking about a 70-yard run every time. Every time. So we've got to be patient and build up as well. We can't just keep going counter, counter, counter. There's got to be spells where it allows us to get control and push wide. So that's what I mean. Your individual battles all over. You've got to track runners in this match, because when Morocco go and they fan out and they get set, they're in very good positions.
Mm-hmm. So there'll be long spells. There'll be long spells that we're under. Canada will be under a certain amount of pressure, of course, and they're going to have to be resilient in those positions and defensively and marking up, pushing up, goalkeepers, communication, all that's got to be just spot on.
So who's playing out wide outside the fullbacks? On the right-hand side, Tejan.
You got to go Tejan.
Yeah, he's got
to
pull his
finger. This has got to be your best.
Thank you, Forrest. Yeah, we have to see Tejan at his best.
Yeah. He's got to pull his finger up.
So we know that. I mean, that's not. Yeah, we know Tejan's starting on the right. Who's on the left? That's the question. Is it Ali? Mm-hmm. Is it Liam Miller? Fonzie can't go to start the match, obviously. So who's on the left?
I go with Ali. Ali can do both sides of the ball. But so can Miller. We've seen that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Jesse Marsh. It's where he's getting paid the big bucks for now. You got to You got to study this Moroccan side. You got to figure out your game plan tactically, what players can match up well with their players. I would probably go with Ali Ahmed. Mm.
That's because what I was thinking.
He gives you more going forward as well.
Do you think it was strange we didn't see him at all versus South Africa?
Yeah, it was a little bit, my opinion, but I don't know. Maybe he's got a little niggle or something. Yeah. I have no idea why he didn't come on.
He's just returning from that injury as well, right? Four games in a pretty tight space. Maybe that's why. I don't know. True. Jesse was at the game last night, actually, in Monterey, scouting it.
Yeah.
Jimmy, you've done this. What can you garner in person that you can't from video?
Well, in person, you see everything, don't you? When you're watching video, it's just wherever the camera is. And sometimes, you know, you might get another feed where you can see behind the goal. But when you go see it live, it's completely different because you can see the tactical movements, the interchanging of play. You can see players' habits. It's a different perspective than what it is in the video when you go see it live because you can see everything. That's the best way to scout is to go see it live, 100%.
Or if you're Morocco, the best way to scout is to listen to Footy Prime. Because we've been spot on, just so everybody knows. If you've listened, catch up on some of our content.
Let's do a decoy pod.
How do we do that? how do we do it?
We'll just do a podcast with complete erroneous information.
Oh, that's awesome.
So in Morocco, listen to it.
Apparently, so Craig, all the players
Jimmy have the pod last week. It's the same.
Morocco, listen to this. Clip this.
Also, the same player is going to play up front.
Yeah.
Hey,
Jesse goes to the matches in person for the concessions, I heard.
Oh really?
That's smart. Right. Yeah. That's like the footy scran.
He's a foodie, right?
Yeah. And Montreal, they're pretty good. It's pretty good too.
Hey, we have to also mention at 1904, Dubs just couldn't draw, but keeps drawing between the lines, eh? We said no swearing. She dropped a swear, but I also have to give her props. Last night on the dark web with her and Craig going back and forth, she said, she's turning into a producer too, Sharbs, just so you know. She's like, save it for the podcast. Save it for the show. I'm like, way to go, Dubs. That's Dubs.
We should never have off-air good conversations ever.
It should always be when it's being recorded
yeah.
at all times.
And part of that was about the penalty takers. I don't understand why these guys are trying to show the goalkeeper the eyes. They're trying to disguise their penalties. It's like, no, 90% of the time or more, the goalkeeper's already made his decision on which way to go.
Mm.
I mean, Peter Schmeichel talked about it about before the penalty show. He's like, I've already made my decision.
That's interesting.
And these guys are trying to show you the eyes.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Wonky eyes. The eyes. But what are they trying to do with the eyes? Explain it to me.
Shaping up to go to the goalkeeper's left and then trying to pull it back across. And they're hitting the post. They're scuffing it wide of the net. There's like they're missing the target.
5 yards wide of the net.
Oh, that was insane.
He dragged it like 5 yards to the
left.
Those
German penalties were amazing. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. I don't think the outplayers realize how difficult it is for the goalkeeper because goalkeepers know how difficult it is for them under pressure. They're looking at that goal and I know when they walk up, it's the one position when a goalkeeper's got no pressure. They walk up, they're looking at the net and they're like, is that goal 6 yards? Like it looks incredibly small. And in training, they're popping it in the top corner. They're picking their corners, no pressure. But all of a sudden, you add that pressure into it.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely themselves.
Well, it doesn't help either when the goalkeepers are massive and they're just, their hands are like this on the crossbar, just standing. Yeah. And you're just like, oh my God.
And they set up like that.
So small.
Yeah.
Like the wingspan. Yeah. You're like, where am I meant to put it now? Mm-hmm. Like you're almost touching the posts.
Yeah.
We've said this, Craig, how many times over the years? If you just belt it into a corner, the goalkeeper's not getting to it. Which is why I always wonder, you know, why don't they become like a metronome? I remember Johnny Wilkinson was a famous England rugby player, won the World Cup with England. And you watch him taking his penalties and he'd do the same thing. Like Ronaldo, actually. It's the same motion every single time. It's a metronome. It's mechanical, right? And if you practice, top left, top right, I mean, it sounds easy right now. what's the problem is between the ears. I understand that. But when these guys are like doing all this messing around, this jinking, this stutters, when you were playing, Craig, guys weren't doing that so much, though, in fairness, were they? They weren't doing the stutter step as much.
Well, I mean, in the Gold Cup final, Asprilla did it.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
He did it. He tried to sit me on my ass first, make a big decision one way or the other, and just slot it in the other side. And then I remember it like it was yesterday. He goes up, does that pause just before he strikes it. He looks up thinking I'm going to have committed, and I'm still on my feet. And I'm like, okay, now I got you. You got no chance of getting any power on that. So I got a really good chance here of saving it, even if it goes right or left. So I had him in my pocket at that stage. I just think they just need to be committed and strike it with some pace, pick a side. And if anything over the above the equator of the net, or you see very few saves. Historically in the World Cup, there's like only four or five saves above the equator of the net. So get, hit us if you can get some
paint
on it.
Yeah. To say something
I'm
rude.
Fascinated. I've never heard the turn of phrase "the equator of the net," but I adore it.
That was really nice.
Wasn't it?
Good, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, I like it. But the other thing is too, Craig, is that you guys and the goalkeeping coaches, you guys study the players as well and their tendencies when it comes to penalty shots, don't you? So if a guy's stepping up and he's had 10 penalty shots and he's gone 8 to the left, 2 to the right, you guys are in communication with one another. Normally he's pointing, saying it's his left side or this is where he tends to go, no?
Yeah, I mean, some guys, if you've seen them have it underneath their gloves, they've got this information on the inside of their gloves too. Tell them which way. You know. But there'll be some penalty takers that have taken so few that you just really don't know what they're going to do, of course. But yeah, there's information on absolutely every player these days. But you do get to that level where there's some players are taking penalties for the first time in a competition. And you'd use that to your advantage to put the pressure on as much as you can.
Who enjoyed the German loss? Yes, at least two of us, or three of us, I guess, to see the Germans lose a shootout in a World Cup.
I wanted them to win. And I think because when I'm watching Paraguay, when they start flopping around and rolling around the pitch, I was like, get these guys out of this tournament, please.
It was a very negative approach.
Yeah, no. And I don't like Paraguay at all. I've discussed that to you before. Yeah. But just the chance to see Germany crash out in a penalty shootout, I didn't think it was possible. Now anything's possible in the world. Mm-hmm. And Canada could win the World Cup now. You know that.
They could.
Because Germany's lost in a shootout in a World Cup.
Rules. You just have to beat France next.
Yep. Do France scare you, Jimmy?
Terrify me.
Oh my God.
They're so good.
Yeah.
I thought Germany, when Neuer finally showed up to this tournament, he made that penalty save. I thought, oh my goodness, they've just had two chances, two penalties to win it, and now they're back to level pegging. I thought it was over. I thought Germany, by then, we go on to win it. And
it was crazy.
Crazy.
And even though they're on like a really poor run in World Cups, like back to 2018 and going out early, like early exits of World Cups, that was the first time they've ever lost in a penalty shootout. So like we think about the Germans, we think about heavyweights in world football. We think about, you know, this clinical ability. So I'm always delighted to see a giant killer storyline. So I agree with Jimmy. Like, I don't want to see flopping. I don't want to see that style of football. But I like to see an upset. And that was an upset on the grandest scale.
Yeah. Do you think Klopp is getting ready now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got his pen.
Oh, I was so... I want Klopp back in a coaching space, because then I don't have to watch his Trivago commercials. Just so you know, those may be the worst. So please, Jurgen, get back in.
That's my kids call him.
Yeah. Where do we see Dubs? Where do we see Klopp? We saw him somewhere at an event before the World Cup, remember? You were sure it was him.
It was the footy. It was a digital day, and it was a photographer right. walking around, and it was Bizarro Klopp. Oh, that's right. Jurgen. Oh no! Hello, Jerome.
Okay, it wasn't actually Jurgen Klopp. I hope not. I don't want Klopp in charge of Germany. I can't like Germany.
No, I feel the same way.
Right? Be so conflicted.
I wasn't conflicted at all because I just kept thinking about my lack of citizenship and how they wouldn't give me citizenship. So literally have no problem with Germany on their way home.
Yeah.
Or to wherever, Tenerife or wherever they're going, Ibiza.
Hagelsmann wasn't a big fan of his.
No.
Something. He's got to be on the outs, right?
I would think so. I mean, okay, he did okay at Euros. But I mean, it wasn't under his guys. But I mean, that's three World Cups now, right? Out two in the group phase, and now one in the round of 32.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they
went into it with one striker basically, and Havertz. Wow. What is he? He's such a good player, but is he a striker? I don't know. He
scores big goals, though, mm-hmm. big games.
Yeah, he scored some big goals.
Yeah, he got the equalizer, right?
Oh, it's weird though. What he is?
Yeah, yeah.
He's that in between kind of player.
Sorry, I don't know if we want to spend more time on Havertz, but what did you think about the goal that was called back? Like the goaltender, the goalkeeper interference.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's setting a pick, anticipating the contact, and then it goes to VAR and the goal is disallowed.
Honestly, I didn't think it's a foul. I didn't think it was a foul. Peter Schmeichel didn't think it was a foul, and then some of the out players are saying, "Oh, I think it's a foul." And Peter Schmeichel, I don't think it's a foul. I didn't think it was a foul.
I put my Craig Forrest hat on, and because we've had this discussion before about interference and going down, that was not a it was kind of like a center in basketball when they think they're getting picked and they want to lean back, and it's not that he faked it. It's that faking the falling, he anticipated the movement and kind of let himself fall back. The player did nothing. And he besides stand there and then move out of the way. So my sister-in-law texted me and I said, look, I think Craig would say, so I answered for you, Craig, to Kadeen and Norm, just so you know, my family.
Yeah.
So
overprotected. He has every right to stand there. And then they look at VAR in slow motion and it does look different when it's in slow motion. They should actually say, you can't look at those in slow motion. You have to look at it in regular pace.
Oh, it's true.
It changes it. Oh. And it's actually, that's the camera from within the net that is the most damning, which I think leads the goal to be overturned. Because like I always back, and to hear you talk about it, Forrest, is very interesting and it gives me more insight in it, that as a goalkeeper, you don't think it was a foul. But I think if the goalkeeper is impeded in trying to set his feet and go to where the shot or the header or like the next action in the phase of play is coming from, then it shouldn't be given. Like you should be protecting the goalkeeper. They should be allowed to set their feet to prepare for what's coming next. That's the way I see it. So yes, it was soft because he kind of flops, but he's at the same time, even though he's anticipating the contact, isn't allowed to get to where he needs to be to then make the save. So we'll leave it there. But like, how about Ta? Like that goal it's his header. It's disallowed, and then he skies it on his penalty. Like, thoughts
bad day.
Him today.
Bad day.
Yeah.
Bad day.
Todd, don't call me Nathan MacKinnon, right? Mm-hmm. Opportunities, right, to change the history of the sport. But, we've discussed it before, I know, but the whole VAR thing, when they don't look at it in real time is such an important component of some of these calls and non-calls in sport, right? Slow motion just doesn't do it justice properly. That being said, I hate to acknowledge this, but I think VAR, generally speaking, has had a pretty good World Cup. Refereeing in general has had a good World Cup. There really aren't too many people screaming about erroneous calls.
We didn't really talk about the penalty in the England match or the non-penalty in the England match.
Yeah,
but I mean, I guess that's on VAR because it wasn't. The non-call wasn't deemed a clear and obvious error.
Mm-hmm. There's some. I mean, it's not perfect. But compared to previous editions of this tournament when, it's been hammered. But generally speaking, it's got things done pretty quickly. It's decided. We've moved on. I don't like it, but it's been acceptable, put it that way. Maybe we're making progress in the
world. It hasn't really caused a lot of delays, right? And no, I think no. that was the issue, the flow of the match, how things would like look on pitch if someone said, oh, go back 4 minutes to, you know, because they've been doing that in the prem. They've been doing that while they're testing this thing out. So I think you're right,
Charles. Desensitized because of the hydration breaks.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Oh, another delay.
Yeah, could be what it is.
Although they'll need it in Toronto on Thursday night, Portugal and Croatia, because it's going to be 37 degrees down at BMO/Toronto Stadium.
And 37,000 to get in.
And 30,000 to get in.
Are you so? What your plans for that game? Jimmy, you're going to that game, aren't you?
I'm going. I will be there.
Stands. I mean, what? I haven't been in Toronto for it seems like months now. I mean, the buzz has been fantastic. What is it going to be like on Thursday for that match, which arguably is the biggest sporting event Toronto's ever seen?
Arguably, yeah.
From a worldwide point of view and numbers,
but worldwide, yeah.
Nothing would compare.
I'm streaking on the field. Footy Prime oh my streak. God. I'll just have this scarf on.
Karen Ryan, you're get inside the perimeter.
There's a 50% Asian man, 50% white man running on the field naked. Well, now we know which is which.
It's bodysuit man.
He's like a seal.
That'd be a lot to pay to streak. You'd have to pay 30 grand to streak.
Oh, yeah.
I hope there's a streaker. But it's not longer, obviously. It's going to be, though, incredible. The vibe down there. I mean, think about the communities. Portugal, we know what a massive Portuguese community Toronto has.
Sorry, Sharms. It's four blocks up. Is the other little Portugal sits
that much?
2 kilometers Ooh. North of BMO. That's it. Mm. It literally, they could march. If they closed Dundas Street West and march down, it would be an amazing, amazing thing to see.
It might be those 2 kilometers. It might be.
Yes. Like going down Dufferin, you'd literally end up between Dufferin and Dovercourt. That's little Portugal right there. You'd end up straight down at BMO Field/Toronto Stadium.
Yeah. I know people from outside of Toronto don't probably realize, or outside of Canada, just how many Portuguese fans there are and Croatian fans. We have a massive Croatian population. Yep. They don't even have to travel. They're already in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And this has the potential on the pitch to be nasty as well. Right? Wow. It could be a classic.
I mean, there's a lot at stake, eh? I mean, this could be Ronaldo's last game.
Modric.
This is done. Yeah. Gotta be, right? Well, but unless they actually say we're retiring, you can't really say it. But
we keep saying that about Croatia, right? Oh, yeah, now they're going to retire. They can have Perisic and Modric coming out in 4 years' time. You just watch.
Yeah.
I know. I think it's going to be just an incredible experience. I ain't complaining being here for the Canada match, but I am going to miss that. I had my match tickets. I'd applied for them just in case Canada lost the last match. So I'm happy that I'm still here. But man, that's going to be an experience. If you're a football fan, I don't care what team you support, just try and get downtown and enjoy the vibes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the last game in Toronto. Yeah.
What are the odds? I'm just looking at
BetMGM. Good question. Have a look. I would say Portugal's probably favored.
Mm. Yes.
But it's not going to be by any significant amount.
Sorry, you guys keep talking while I look this up.
That's the last game in Toronto as well, right?
It's the last game. Yeah. And JC, you might want to promo us because we'll be.
If you've got say 25,000, so not quite enough to get into the game, why not come down to Earl's on King West and see Wonger and I, as we'll be hosting what's no doubt will be completely packed mayhem. It's going to be nuts, like you said, like. Those two communities in the city are insane. Like, they're not insane. They're lovely people. But, I mean, there's so many of them. And they're so passionate. And so that, hopefully, that spills onto the street and it up into Earl's. Both floors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For our event with the Toronto Star.
So on BetMGM, Portugal is favored 1.77 to Croatia 4.80. So it's
Oh, really?
Quite, yeah. So wow. I'm basically... a big Portugal favorite number.
Favoring Portugal.
4 years ago, Sharms, you were saying there's no way Ronaldo will be playing in the 2026.
I was saying it was just me.
No. Everyone was saying, but you're pretty vociferous about it all. Like the big thing for me though, he might be able to last another 4 years. He could.
Well, he wants to. He'll play, right?
Yes.
He calls the shots there. He could be 50, and you say, no. I still want to play. Therefore, I'm playing, and he'll play.
Yeah, I think Ronaldo, the way he looks out there, God, that guy. I'm telling you, he doesn't age. I think I look good. This guy, he beats Wonger.
He's gonna be injected with like the bone marrow of newborns or something.
Yes, it absolutely.
Some weird stuff going on there.
And lotion of T cells that just keep manufacturing them over and over.
Yeah, he's whatever's available for longevity. He's doing it.
Yeah,
right. No matter the cost.
Those aren't his kids. Those are clones. And bring them up. Hey, there's totally, Ronaldo still playing. He's 88.
He's looking younger than ever. Well, we haven't mentioned Brazil yet, by the way, beating Japan. I mean, you feel for Japan, but listen, it's nice to see Brazil. If we lost Brazil, Germany, and the Dutch on the same day in the round of 32, that'd be a bit of a stretch to say this good for the World Cup, right? Although, I mean, listen, Japan brought a lot to this World Cup, and it's a shame they're out, but they weren't that proactive, shall we say, in their style of football. But the Brazil move on, but they're not Brazil.
Do they clean as well when they lose, though?
They're cleaning up, and so are their fans in the stadium, spotless.
Yeah.
Probably left some like origami like things too on the table. Like they're just the best.
Oh, yeah. When they left, Well, who was it? Jordan left a little gift I forget where they were. For FIFA, when they bowed out. I don't know what it was. It looked quite nice, though. Mm. Leaving a little something, or rather, in them to say thank you for being such generous guest hosts. I wonder what Iran left when they...
They made a swan out of a towel and just left it.
I've seen those baths.
Well, that'd be Mexico, right? For sure, because whenever I go to a Mexican resort, they always leave me a beautiful swan and a towel in the bed.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
I think the most disappointed people in the World Cup are the cleaners after Japan were knocked out.
Yeah.
No tips. Right. Yeah.
What do we do?
Now I got to clean it myself.
No, if they're like my wife, it doesn't matter how clean it is, it's not clean enough. So they'd still be cleaning, just to make a point.
I was thinking about Craig's telling us about Brazil coaches going to Japan and kind of coaching them up 15, 20, 30 years ago, Craig. And all of a sudden, they're playing kind of the same game. I enjoyed that game yesterday. I enjoyed that match. So I was wondering, like, when you're seeing these development, does that give you rise to the, hey, this is where Canada can be, or this is that kind of next step in the evolution of world football that these smaller teams or countries that haven't had legacy of football in their history can now come to the forefront?
Well, sure. I mean, they've decided that they would take the sort of Brazilian model and other models as well and sort of take the best of everything and what was good for them. And I think like they've just worked on their technical side of things at a level that other countries certainly haven't. They're all very technically gifted and compete. And it's disappointing that they went out because they do bring a lot to the World Cup, of course, and they certainly could have gone further. They could have won that 1-0 up at half, put them under pressure, certainly made a game of it against the Brazilian side that I still don't think this. I mean, this isn't the best Brazilian side by any stretch that we've ever seen before.
No,
and Ancelotti probably finds himself in a position where he thinks he's a little bit fortunate to get through.
Yeah, but tactical tweak at halftime to essentially go with like a front four. Really released Vinny to do what Vinny does best because Japan were able to keep him at bay and to control him, bring him inside, double teaming him. And then he was just unlocked, had more freedom in that left channel. And then the Japanese were unable to to kind of keep them contained for the rest of the game. And so tip your hat to Ancelotti there for doing that and playing Martinelli a little bit more central.
Mm. Yeah. I like Ancelotti, what he said when he said, I don't care about all the flair and everything. It's a World Cup. We just do whatever we have to do to win.
We need results. Yeah.
We need results. That's it. Just win. Find a way.
Mm-hmm. Although you say you don't care about flair, but that Vinicius Jr. nutmegging the Japanese player and then going down the left side and then the same kind of flick on the right outside of his foot. And then Suzuki had to make a crazy, he actually made an amazing save, but it was tagged to the corner. So if you're on, want to go on YouTube
his and eyes.
Track down, it was spectacular. And I kind of went, oh, this is what this kid brings out. Like if you're going to compare it to hockey, it's kind of an end-to-end thing that you've basically one-on-one solo talent that you can't kind of recreate.
Yeah, Vinny's great. And he's the one player perhaps in this current Brazil team that really espouses everything that Brazil is perceived to be. Because people don't realize that, okay, Jogo Bonito, and no one does it better when they're doing it that way, but it looks better in those yellow shirts and blue shorts. It just does. The same move in that shirt compared to just an all-white shirt, for example, Kit, like it looks way better in the Brazil colors. Always has. Colombia looks great as well. You know, Sweden, oh my God, Ibra, look at that. My God, best goal ever. It's because he's wearing a yellow shirt. That's the reason. But people forget that the great Brazil teams, though, were amazing defensively. Mm. And were nasty in that midfield, right? Right, Jimmy? Yeah. They were, that's how they won championships. Yeah, the highlights were great. But be it 94, 02, before then, they were like nasty, physical, dirty midfielders and defense that you couldn't break down.
Yeah. Dunga.
Yeah. Dunga was
not
amazing.
A sexy player at all. Mm-hmm. So people need to just realize that they can do both. But who knows? I still don't think they're going to win this thing. They haven't impressed me enough yet. But still a very solid team. Do you have any comments, Sir Wonga?
I want to talk about a article that came down that was Christine Sinclair being interviewed by CTV, and she said, we are now, oh, a little ding. Thank you, Jimmy.
Cheers.
She said, during the first half of South Africa game, I booked flights to Houston. I knew we were going to win. But it was about what will make, here's the big discussion point. Oh, I wish we had the big question lined up. Sorry, JC. What would make our team think, our crew think, that we've now become a football nation? What is it that means a football nation as a threshold for you? So because Christine Sinclair has said, okay, we are now a football nation. I'm not convinced, but I'd love to hear what that kind of bar is for our three pros and you, Sharms, just because you've been covering it for so long.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Ring, ring, what's that sound? Big question that needs answering.
Dubs,
you go first.
Oh, I get to go first?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm usually pretty optimistic about these things and glass half full. I don't know if we've arrived yet. I think we're getting close. And I think the true test will be post this World Cup, whenever this men's team goes out. But I think you're seeing it with the traveling fans. I think you're seeing it with the vibe and the buzz in Toronto and in Vancouver. That's aside from, you know, the big matchups and the big stars that are showing up. It's they're showing up to support Canada, and people are aware of this team. And, you know, Jesse Marsh's push to make all of these guys household names, that's a big part of it. So what happens after? And it goes to our conversation we had with the Rash. Like, are people pushed and kind of enticed and brought into the narrative to find out more about Moise Bumbido and go follow him at Nice and watch Ligue 1 and Alistair Johnson in the Scottish Premier League and wherever Jonathan David ends up and Kyle Larin at Southampton? That's the big test, because it was that for the women's team. The question was, when they were on their back-to-back-to-back Olympic medals culminating in the gold, it was, oh, I'm really excited. I was speaking to Evelyn Vienne. We did something for Quebec soccer. And she's like, people ask me about when the next Olympics is. And am I excited for that? Not realizing that I toil day in, day out playing for my club team and training. And there's other things on the docket in between those big national team Olympic matchups that we're successful at. But it's about putting that on people's radars, and then the trickle down effect into the grassroots, into the elite levels that aren't tier one, and what that means for the development of the game and people paying attention for it. Bums in seats at CPL and NSL. We've talked about this ad nauseum. So for me, the measuring stick or the litmus test is yes, it's about the results, because we talked about how that would drive attention and eyeballs for our men's national team and for the sport in Canada. But it's about what happens after this World Cup is done.
And that's why you go first, Gregor.
I would agree with that. I think it's what we do at the local community level. And do we get out and the Canadians support the NSL and CPL and everything else that goes along with it? We only, in the men's game, we have three MLS teams. We potentially could lose one or two. That's a big backward step. But when people start going out and supporting all these other leagues, and that's when we will become a soccer nation. And I would say that we're not there yet. We're recency biased, obviously, big tournaments. We've always supported big tournaments, whether it was 2002, 2007, under 20 men's World Cup, the women's World Cup in 2015. We support the big events, but do we support the grassroots football? And I haven't seen enough to say that we will at this moment.
I think I'm going to go the other side here, and just watching this whole country tuning in to this national team. Jerseys are sold out all over the place. You walk down the street, you see Canada jerseys on. You know, if this was Basketball Canada right now, you're not seeing this across the country because people don't tune in. If you watch Canada baseball, people don't tune in. Our national hockey team, yeah, some people tune in, not many, but like a lot of people tune in. But because our sport is global and we have a lot of people that have moved to this country from other places around the world, this is their sport. This is their passion, their game. And now they can relate and go, yeah, I've moved to this country, but I'm Canadian now and I'm supporting this team. This is the biggest movement in sport right now across this country. And when I'm tuning in and I'm seeing on Instagram, people in Calgary, Vancouver, Halifax, Montreal, Toronto, all over the country tuning in and supporting and all these watch parties across the country, this game's here. The support is here. And I've never seen people support this sport compared to what they do in the other sports like basketball and baseball. We don't support it the same way that we're supporting this national team right now. So that movement is here. And I'm saying, yes, we are a football nation. There's millions and millions across this country that are supporting this game.
I'd say that we're definitely a country that loves the big event, right? The big party. We know that. But let's use hockey very quickly. Olympics, the country does, for sure. They embrace it. The World Cup, the World Championship, they don't. Not even close to the same thing. It's Canada still playing, but it's not top level, right? So I believe the fan base is here to be a football nation. I've seen that. I didn't believe it before the World Cup. I do now. I've seen the way the nation's being engaged. I don't know yet whether corporate Canada acknowledges it enough yet. We'll find that out in months to come. And like you said, bums on seats in NSL, in CPL is key to see that as well. Mm-hmm. And that evidence, I'm not 100% sure about that just yet, but the foundation is here. It's how do we grow the foundation and convince them to watch sports outside of every 4 years and these amazing runs. So we're close. Also, broadcasters, you know, the rights are up for the next World Cup. Who comes to the table? Is it going to be a streamer? Netflix have the Women's World Cup next year. Mm-hmm. Will a Bell or a Rogers step up for the men's? Or will it be a streamer? When the next Premier League deal comes up, Champions League, are the conventional broadcasters going to realize, oh, you know what? There's a groundswell of support for this sport. Let's jump that. Let's grow that. I hope so. Or will it be a Amazon? That's going to be really interesting.
But the other thing too, Sharms, I don't know if you guys read it, but DAZN just made a deal with the CFL to promote their game internationally. And so while these streamers are getting in the game, it's also about Canadian sports and Canadian content. So and that actually leads a lot of North American content in, you know, internationally. So I think there's a lot of good things to be said. I think my little bar is when a Copa or a Gold Cup get as, and yes, they're national, but when they get the fans, when CONCACAF is almost as important or Copa America is almost as important as what this World Cup is, because that's huge in Europe, right?
That the Euros, AFCON, yes, are massive, just as big as World Cups.
Yes.
In those regions, yeah, exactly. Okay, listen, we're out of time. That was fun. As we begin the build up to Saturday. Another round of games today. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Thank you, everyone. And make sure you download that BetMGM app. Make it legendary. Cheers for watching.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Hey, only one swear, W. Very good. I thought you were going to go. Pretty good.
Not bad. You know where the money shot is on the Pens?
Uh-oh.
Right above the Tropic of Cancer.
I was going to say.
I've been sitting on that shame for 20 minutes.
New merch drop alert. Go to wearefootyprime.com and go to Footy Prime the shop to find the Alfonso Decoy t-shirt. Available for a limited time.